Well, we've all heard or said the familiar phrase, if at first you don't succeed, try again. I hope that phrase is one the Badgers will be working on in the coming week. Maybe you've also heard, winners never quit and quitters never win. These sayings underscore our belief that effort ultimately brings about results, that persistence pays off. That's certainly true for the Syrophoenician woman in our text this morning. She had a lot at stake. Her daughter needs to be healed of a demon possession, and she believes Jesus is the one to do it. She didn't walk away from her surprising and frankly upsetting conversation with Jesus. Her intense hope for her daughter's future simply would not let her. This woman, incidentally, couldn't be more different than Jesus. She's a woman in a culture where men are in charge. She's Greek and not Middle Eastern. She's an urbane woman with financial means. Unlike Jesus, the itinerant preacher who spends most of his time relying on the hospitality of strangers. And she's a pagan, with the chutzpah to barge into a Jewish household without invitation to interrupt Jesus. She's intense and pushy and desperate, driven by the despair of her daughter's mental illness. Life and death are on the line here as she breaks all the cultural rules that separate her from this Jewish healer, begging Jesus to cast out the demon. She clearly didn't come expecting to be insulted by him, but here she is, Mark tells us, now in the middle of a conversation where she's being denigrated. And she doesn't walk away. What a courageous woman. I'm sad to say that Jesus does not seem impressed by her courage, at least initially. Her intensity and resolve are matched by his commitment to his mission to the Jews. Let the children of Israel be fed first, he tells her, for it's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. And who are the dogs he's referring to? Those Gentile dogs, like the Syrophoenician woman who's standing in front of him. Nowhere in the gospel tradition does Jesus respond to a sincere petitioner in such a harsh and insulting manner. Was he having a bad day? Did she catch him with his compassion down? This encounter, after all, follows on the heels of intense conflict with the Pharisees, as we saw last week. And as Jesus withdraws to the northern border regions of Galilee, Mark tells us, he finds the Syrophoenician woman intruding upon his solitude. Could it be that we are coming face to face with the gritty, messy humanity of Jesus, who, like all of us, grows tired, who can insult, and even in a weak moment can even bear a little prejudice? Well, whatever is going on with Jesus, and biblical scholars have been pondering this cryptic conversation for centuries, none of it slows down that brave woman standing next to him. She takes his insult, his mission to the Jews, which excluded her, and in a rhetorical flourish that would make any trial attorney proud, hands it right back to him in a new frame of reference. Sir, she says with great respect, even the dogs underneath the table eat the children's crumbs. Yes, she fully acknowledges the priority of his ministry to the Jews, but then enlarges his metaphor to include her own need and her daughter's within the purview of his mission. In her expanded frame of reference, there is enough food for Gentiles as well. The Syrophoenician woman snared Jesus in his own words as Martin Luther put it, who dwelt on this wild and weird passage with great fondness. In his no, Luther said of this conversation, she found the hidden yes. Parker Palmer describes the kind of tension experienced between Jesus and the Syrophoenician woman as the tragic gap. The gap between what we know to be true, our frame of reference, the one Jesus holds in our text, and the possibility of something better or more faithful or more just might emerge, a larger frame, if you will, like that of the Syrophoenician woman. Living in the tragic gap is all about learning to live with tension, faithfully holding tension between reality and possibility and the hope of being opened up to a new alternative. It's a practice most of us don't do very well because, with all the contentious issues of life, a larger frame of reference does not come easily or quickly, or with the bravado of big egos. Consider the case of John Woolman, a Quaker who lived in colonial New Jersey. A tailor by trade, Woolman lived among Quaker farmers and businessmen whose affluence depended heavily upon slave labor. But Woolman received a revelation from God that slavery was an abomination, and that Quakers should set their slaves free. For 20 years, at great personal cost, Woolman devoted himself to sharing his larger frame of reference with the Quakers, walking his talk with every step. When he visited a remote farmhouse to share his revelation, he would fast rather than eat a meal prepared by slaves. If he inadvertently benefited from a slave's labor, he would insist on paying that person. Woolman's message was not well received by his fellow Quakers. In the words of the self-satirizing Quaker quip, "We came to this country to do good and ended up doing very well." In other words, Woolman's message, if embraced, would require the comfortable Quaker gentry to sacrifice financially. John Woolman held a terrible tension as he traveled from town to town, farm to farm, meeting to meeting, speaking his truth and standing in the tragic gap between the Quaker vision of the image of God in every person and the reality of Quaker slaveholding. But hold that tension he did for 2 decades, until the Quakers reached a consensus that they should set all of their slaves free. Now, on one level, this is a story of a Christian community that embraced evil and clung to it far too long. And yet the Quakers were the first religious community in this country to free their slaves, and they did so almost 80 years before the Civil War was fought. Quakers took a stand against slavery early in American history, partly because of one man, John Woolman, who was willing to hold the tension between the reality and the possibility. But the entire Quaker community was also willing to hold that tension until they were opened up to a more integral way of being in the world. They refused to succumb to the impulse to resolve the tension prematurely, either by throwing Woolman out of their church or by voting to allow the slave-approving majority to have its way. Instead, in an act of great patience and humility, hallmarks of good Christian character, they let the tension between reality and possibility break their collective heart open to justice, truth, and love. Thanks to the tenacious persistence of the Syrophoenician woman, Jesus found the patience and the humility that allowed his frame of reference to be enlarged and his mind to be changed. For saying this, you may go, he says to the Syrophoenician woman. And then in one final act of compassion, he tells her, the demon has left your daughter. So she went home, Mark notes, found the child lying on the bed and the demon gone. You know, life presents all of us with intractable challenges, times when we feel hopeless that nothing will change. It may be a family conflict. It may be our nation so deeply divided. Our text this morning suggests a pathway out of our dilemma, to find the hidden yes in every situation that feels like an overwhelming no. Persistence, patience, humility. These are the marks of every follower of Jesus in situations like these. Because we believe, hope won't quit. Amen.